Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. So, Dave, we have a fun statistic here. The Bears' record of their coaches in games when winning the turnover margin. Fox, of course, they won the turnover margin, still lost the game. 5-7 now. That is a 417 winning percentage. Lovey was 52-11, which is an 825 winning percentage. Mark Trestman 9-2, mainly because of what they had going from the Trestman era. If you remember that, they started out playing pretty good defense, and then it fell apart. Trestman from the Lovey era. Dave wants that 22-5, 81.5% when you win the turnover ratio.
Well, I think, and no, I don't want to pat myself, but I used to tell the team when we were even, I think we won, because I remember doing that study when I was at Pitt, you know, sure, the Dolphins, and when we were even, I think we won 70% of our games, just being right, even. You know what I mean? And if we won the turnover battle, then it was whatever
you were one, 81.5%, 22-5 when you won the turnover battle.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, you know, that's, yeah. You know, so what, why? I mean, what goes into that? If you win the turnover battle and you don't win the game, you know, is it penalties? Is it kicking game? Is it field position? You know, I mean, you got to look at the other things that obviously go into it. And
well, I think in this case, it was absolutely no off. It was 36 plays, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah, that doesn't help.
Eight first downs
and third down conversions. You know, who? I don't have it in front of me right now. I think were the Bears. I mean, they were actually 50%.
They were 50%. Right. Yeah.
But the ones, you know, the one stat that jumped at me, I used to always look at it and say, offensively, if we don't average over 5 yards a play, run and pass combined, we're not going to win this game. And I looked at that one stat and it jumped at me. I think the Bears were 4.1. Yards per play. Well, you'd like to be 4.1 yards per run. You know what I mean? Not when you combine the passes. So they're not making enough plays in the pass, if you ask me. And we know the obvious reasons. We've been beating that.
I mean, the Niners allowed 375 yards, give or take, on average, that defense. Right. I mean, they're at the bottom of every defensive category, and you end up with 62 yards rushing, or 64 yards and 102 yards passing and 8 first downs. You know, and that follows up a week where you had no first downs the first half, and you know, that's what's the, you talk about passionate fan base. I mean, when people are sitting there and making the effort to go to Soldier Field, that's not entertainment. I mean, that's not entertainment at all.
And here's the numbers, Dave. 5-for-10 on third downs for the Bears, which is 50%.
Right.
The Niners had 10 third down conversions. That's the most they've had in 10 years. Well, so that's easy to remember. 10 of 18.
Yeah, that's like 70%. Yeah, that
the Bears were 4.1 yards per play.
Per play, run and pass combined.
Pass combined, 36 plays, 147 yards. The Niners, 5.3, but that's because they ran 73 plays to the 36 for the Bears. It's unbelievable.
The time of possession was 39 minutes to 21.
It's unbelievable.
It's amazing it came down to
that
a field
team,
goal.
Come on.
Yep. Yep,
it is amazing it came down to a field goal. They couldn't score a touchdown. Yeah. They got in the red zone for a living. They had three drives of 14 plays or more.
Yeah, well, that tells you, right? I mean, so your third down conversions, you're happy with 50%. You're doing backflips. At least I am. You know, so that wasn't the third down conversions. It was number of opportunities and big chunks. You know, I mean, what was the longest? How many big plays did the Bears have in the game? I bet you they didn't have a play over 30 yards or very few of them.
Well, they had the punt return was a big play. That doesn't count on their offense, but they had the longest play they had in that game was they had a 14-yard run by Jordan Howard, and they had a 21-yard Tariq Cohen moment.
Yeah, yeah. So not by a receiver. So the biggest play receiver had was probably 15 yards. We got to come back to that.
13 yards to the tight end Daniel Brown.
There you go.
And Kendall Wright had a 12-yard play.
I'm depressed again.
No, I mean, yeah, big plays. That's the deal. We got to get some chunks. Got to get some chunks somehow.
Let's talk some college football, Dave, because you were at the Big Ten Championship, and it was a lot of fun to watch that game. One hell of a game. And Ohio State, obviously, wins the game. Really good football game. They did a really good job. They had the – boy, they have the skill position speed, and they've got guys that can – you know, just speed, man. They had some huge plays in that game. Against a Wisconsin defense, it is hard to have big plays against, but they hadn't seen that kind of speed, I would say. And yet, here you go. They finish up what they're doing, and the Alabama's in the Final Four. You got basically the South, right? You got Clemson is in South Carolina. You got Georgia in Georgia. You got
Oklahoma.
I don't know where they're from. And obviously, Alabama, the names will tell you other than Clemson. And I just think that, you know, when all is said and done, that 31-point loss by Ohio State really bit them. Now, you come away from that, you say, why did they play Oklahoma again?
Yeah.
Why would they even bother playing Oklahoma? If you don't get credit for a tough schedule and a narrow loss, then why would you, you know, why would you ruin your season effectively by having the second loss because Oklahoma beat you?
Well, two arguments that Ohio State has, I think, is that they beat three ranked teams. And Urban said it, and everybody says, well, where are they ranked now? You know, they beat Penn State, that was a top team. They beat, obviously, the number four team in the country in Wisconsin, and they beat a ranked team, Michigan State. The only ranked team at the end of the day that Alabama beat was LSU.
Number 19 LSU.
Yeah, so, I mean, but more importantly, I don't have a problem with Alabama. I really don't. But since they started this committee, I didn't like it the way it was formed, because I said, let me tell you something right now. Too many decisions are going to be made in that committee meeting and not on the field. Teams, one conference is playing eight Power Five teams. Another conference is playing nine conference games. You know what I mean? Some teams are playing seven or eight home games. This is the first year the Big 12 is finally playing a championship game. You know, and Notre Dame is trying to get in, and deservingly so, they should. But they don't even play a championship game. That's not fair in my mind. So I'm almost glad that this happened, because two teams from one conference, in my opinion, the committee right now is going to have to huddle up, and in my opinion, they got to expand and make some changes. If you're Barry Alvarez right now, what are you saying? What do we have a championship game for?
Sat home as an undefeated team and waited for the invitation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They sit home at 12-0 and they don't play the game and they're in. Alabama sat home on the couch and watched and they got in, and Wisconsin gets eliminated. I don't like it, because I sat in those meetings, and then I'll get off this bandwagon here. I sat in the meetings, guys, when the committee was talking about, when I was coaching at Pitt, expanding and having a national championship. And I said, let's do it. Let's do it. And they said, well, we can't because of student athletes. And then you got two teams that are in the playoff and, you know, a championship thing. And you're kind of cutting away. It's college football. Everybody else in the country is eliminated. Well, guess what? Now we got nobody in the West Coast. The Pac-12's eliminated. Nobody in the Big Ten. And draw a map up. We were talking earlier, and you look at that part of the country. You take the Big Ten out, and you take the Pac-12 out, and you look at geographically the area that's involved in this. You chopped away at least half of the college football fans. I don't think it's good for college football. I don't have a problem with Alabama. That's a whole debate. Ohio State, I thought they should have got in because they won the championship. Forget about that. I think that I just don't like – I think there's way too many decisions being made in the committee and not enough on the field.
And you brought up a good point to us when we were talking about this off the air that, you know, JT Barrett comes, what, 5-6 days after having his knee scoped?
Yep.
He's out there gutting it out. And I'm not the biggest JT Barrett fan, but they're a much better – team without him calling, you know, behind center. 3 weeks from now, he's going to be relatively healthy, right? So the basketball tournament, they take into account who's coming back, everything else. I don't think any attention was paid to
that. Ohio State will be a significantly better team if that kid were able to
do
what he does.
And you know, we're talking Matt Leinart, and we're talking to the guys at USC. And USC is playing their best football now. Ronnie Jones is back healthy. He's one of the best backs in the country. Darnold, their defense, okay. And they win their game, and they are 10-2 right now, mm-hmm. right? I'm sorry, 11-2. They won the championship.
Yeah,
11-2. They're 11-2 right now, and No one even brings their name up. You know what I mean? I mean, how many, if we expand this thing, how many times did the sixth seed in the NFL, okay, the sixth seed, the bottom team, a la the Steelers, a la the Giants, go on and win the Super Bowl? Teams get hot. Teams get healthy.
That's right.
At the end of the season. Don't deny those teams an opportunity.
And it's interesting because when you hear people talk of expansion, there's a lot of people that say, just make it two more. Make it six. Six would be enough.
I'm fine six or eight.
I don't
care.
I think it has to be eight because if you're giving away buys, then you got to look. And maybe it's that the team that does play stays, you know, focused and it's an advantage. Maybe a layoff at that point of the year after a layoff isn't good for a football. I don't know how it'll turn out.
Right. But there'll be an argument about differently,
that.
Right?
There will be an argument one way or another that either it's too big an advantage or not enough of an advantage.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I heard that I kind of liked, if they went to eight, that way you don't get into buys and all that. If they went to eight, then you have the first round, like next week or the week after, and the number one team plays the number eight team, and the number one team gets to play the first round is played at the top four teams' home field. So they get a little home field advantage.
Right, sure. Right.
But everybody's involved. You know, now you got the USC's. Maybe you got Central Florida involved. You know what I mean? I mean, every conference has a champion, and you play the first round at a home site, and then you go to the bowl games and pick up what we're doing right now. You know, but everybody has at least got a dog in the race, so to speak, and they're excited about watching now and being, you know.
And the geographical argument aside, did they get the Final Four right? Is that going to be a good Final Four? Is that representative of this season?
Is it over? Or some people say, you know, if you had Alabama and Ohio State playing on a neutral field, who would win? And that's your fourth
team. And you know what? I could not, as much as I'm a Ohio State fan, you know, a Big Ten guy, everybody knows that, I could not argue that Alabama would probably beat them. I mean, I think they...
Yeah, it's a hard argument.
It's a hard argument. It truly is.
All righty, Dave, thank you so much. It is always a pleasure, and we appreciate you coming in and getting a chance to sit and talk. We will take a quick break, and we'll be right back. He is Coach Wonstead, Mullion Hanley on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mullion Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. Always a joy to talk to Coach Wonstead. You really do learn something. In the course of that, I loved some of the stuff he had to say when we talked about the situation they were in, blocking the punt, blocking the field goal or going for it. And Dave kind of agreed with it and said, you know, allowing a touchdown sounds good at a coaching clinic.
Yeah, and you know, I always love when, if you're watching on watch67score.com, you can see Dave, and I love when he goes to the whiteboard, the grease board, and does, sometimes he'll drop a play, whatever.
Yep.
Today he gave us a Picasso version of the United States.
He gave us a beautiful breakdown of the different conferences.
And how much of the country is left out of the Final Four.
When you see it like that, it's really fascinating.
If he had signed that, we'd make some money.
Mike!
An art gallery.
It's on 670thescore.com. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Calling from Lighthouse Point, Florida. Originally born and raised in Whiting, Indiana. How are you guys?
Wow, fantastic.
You enjoying retirement down there? Is that what's going on?
I wish I was retired. Maybe in a few more years when I keep betting against the Bears.
Oh. What are they now? 0-7 straight up when
favored?
Oh, listen, I had to bet the 49ers, but anyhow.
Nice.
Well, I talk about three quick things. Number one. Whoever suggested Pat Shurmur, he would be on my number one list. That guy has done a tremendous job with three different mediocre quarterbacks and made them relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Bridgewater, Bradford, and now Case Keenum.
Yeah, he's done a great job with Keenum.
He's probably the only candidate that really has a resume of grooming quarterbacks that I know out there. They're talking about the quarterback coach from Philadelphia and then this guy Nagy from KC. They're more or less quarterback coaches. They don't have the OC experience. Number two, what if they don't fire Fox?
Worry about it.
He sounded like yesterday that he all.
Yeah, it sounded like they told him. Yeah, no, I wouldn't worry about that, Mike.
Let's bypass that. Let's go on to my point number three, which Biggs and you guys were talking about towards the end of his call. Is the complete imbalance of this coaching GM fiasco. So you're going to try to bring in a new coach where the GM, after one more disastrous year, could be next year, could be gone. And if he's gone and a new GM comes in, that coach may be fired. I think any coaching candidate is going to take a look at this.
It's going to take a certain type of person that wants the job here for those reasons. Absolutely, Mike. You're spot on. I agree with him.
I don't think it's out of the realm. They don't announce Ryan Pace has an extension, too.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the Bears, right? Because if George really believes this young guy is
Let me ask you this. Let's just say you're right, okay? Let's say you give him the extension.
I wouldn't do it.
I'm just saying. Let's just say that they do it. And then you hire some offensive guru, and then you don't see an improvement in the offense. Now what? What is your excuse? We have to rebuild the offensive line.
I'm leaning more toward saying goodbye to Ryan Pace this year, just along with John Fox. But it would not be out of the realm.
I don't think they will. But I thought there's been a couple of games that have been. I mean, I thought that Eagles game was god awful. That's a roster problem. I thought the San Francisco game.
Oh, that's the indicts everybody. Indicts everybody.
And it's a huge roster problem.
But to go back for people who didn't know, Ryan Pace has 2 years left on his first contract with the Chicago Bears. He's got to go out and hire a head coach and give them. Well, if you're talking 2 years, you're not talking to anybody. If you're talking 4 or 5 years, now you're giving the head coach more power in the building because everyone can look around and do the math. Well, wait a minute, this guy, they're not firing him in 2 years because we know they're not going to pay three years to walk away. So. You know, Kyle Shanahan got 6 years, as Bigsy wrote today. Yeah. Guaranteed. Fully guaranteed 6 years.
So did Lynch.
Right. So now the GM's going to hire a guy and have to go beyond 2 years that he has. So, I mean, if he's not fired, you almost have to give him an extension.
If the Bears give a coach a six-year contract, they're guaranteeing 5 years because they're not going to pay the guy for not working. Aaron is on 670thescore.com. Good morning, Aaron.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. And going back to the last caller's last point, along with Biggs, and you guys have pointed out that if we get rid of the coach, we're stuck with Ryan because of his drafts and free agents. We look for another coach to come in, and they're stuck. But here's the point: Jim Fink, for me, was and Jerry were probably the last two. With Fink having vice president or executive vice president powers. Can we look at restructuring the front office so that it's desirable to get somebody to come in and work with this quarterback who has a GM, who has the powers of the VP, and he's able to bring in his own head coach? Because right now, we're going to be stuck in the same merry-go-round.
You know, and Aaron, I agree with you about what we're going to do, but here's the thing. George McCaskey likes the hierarchy the way it is. He likes it this way.
Well, and you know.
Now, I mean, again, that's why Olin Krutz is suggesting stop handing your team over to someone else. Like, George needs to take a bigger role.
But hand it over to that team of Jerry Vannesi and Jim Finks was terrific because you had bright people running the thing. You found the fiery coach in Ditka. You had Buddy Ryan. I mean, the whole thing worked,
and you had Tobin. You had Bill Tobin
running
the players.
Yeah, exactly right. The scouting staff and everything else. I mean, Molly's right. Are they going to go get an overseer? I mean, who wants to take over this thing? And does Ryan Pace want to be supervised? Well, you know, I don't care if he does or he doesn't. If I think it's the right thing to do, then go find yourself a football guru.
So you're saying you're going to sign the Ted petition and try to get, you know, whoever it is.
I could put Ted down the hall. He can negotiate contracts and get sponsorships lined up and do the money things, do everything. Keep their bank account full like he's done forever. Just keep him out of the football meetings. That's all. I mean, he fancies himself. He told us. I've been around for 25 years. I've grown and learned it. I'm a football guy. I wasn't when I started. Okay, maybe in his mind he is, but he's not really a guy you want sitting there weighing in on critical football decisions. So let him do what he does best. Crunch the numbers, negotiate contracts, sign the contracts.
So he's Crane Kenny, and you just, all you're short is Theo.
Yeah. That's it. Okay. So go find yourself that.
Just find Theo.
That's it.
That's not much.
And then go have lunch.
Robert. Robert is on the road. Good morning, Robert.
Hey, guys. What keeps me up at night, stressed, worried, and taking Pepto-Bismol, is if you guys remember, they hired a consultant to figure this out.
Yes.
So now what? What do you do? Form a committee to hire a consultant, to find the right consultant, to find the right GM?
You know what the Giants have done?
What?
They've hired a consultant. You know who they hired?
Who?
Ernie, former consultant.
Ernie Accorsi?
Yes.
Wow.
You got to love it. I thought he was with the Giants, but apparently he's helping the – I thought he was with the Lions, but he's apparently helping the Giants. What the hell's going on?
I, you know.
Greg is in West Chicago. Good morning, Greg.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, hey, good, good, good.
You know, my feeling is, how about bringing in a general manager like Gary Fensick, like San Francisco did? Somebody who knows football, but he's also smart.
Yeah, smart helps.
Yeah.
I wonder if Gary would lose money on that deal.
Very successful businessman. Yeah. Travels the globe, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I've always felt that the former Bears were a resource that this team had failed to tap into. And sometimes when I hear people say, well, why not Peyton Manning? Get Peyton Manning in here as an overseer. It seemed like there were a lot of people that came through town that were pretty bright that could be able to help out in some of that capacity. And I know at one point, 100 years ago, they did interview Tom Thayer about a front office job. That would have been a good idea, in my opinion.
Well, you look, and Gary Fensick, okay, you know him as a defensive guy. You know him now as a guy who runs companies or, you know, he's a mogul in the business world, right? That means he's a smart guy. His talents translate. He's not just looking at, you know, what your secondary needs. He's going to look at what your whole organization needs.
It's like asking a guy to, you know, come run the State Department, and you never know what's going to happen.
Next thing you know, there's some name calling.
Allegedly.
I was laughing out loud when I saw they brought back Ernie Accorsi.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you just, okay, yeah, he brought in Ryan Pace. How's that working out after 3 years? I know his history with the team, but come on. But anyways, are they going to do that again?
No, that, what I heard, John Fox is the next Giants coach.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Molly and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love our chance to talk to Mike Florio. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
You know, we're trying to figure out if Gronk got enough. Should Gronk have gotten a longer suspension? Is one game enough? It seems, I don't know, like it was a really bad cheap shot, and maybe he deserved three.
Well, look, I think that at a minimum it should have been two, just in the anticipation that it would be reduced to one on appeal. I'm going to be very curious to see what happens, as will everyone else be, on the appeal process, an independent process. We're so conditioned to think of the NFL as judge, jury, and executioner on matters of player discipline for in-game infractions. There's an independent process. Derek Brooks or James Thrash will be the hearing officer, and hopefully they'll uphold the suspension, because I think there just needs to be a clear, bright-line understanding for all players as to what is and isn't acceptable. And after the play, to dive on an opponent who doesn't see it coming and cause not one but two blows to the head. He took a forearm to the head, and then the head hit the ground. It was egregious. It was uncalled for. Gronkowski has apologized for it. I kind of wish he hadn't even appealed it. I understand that you have to take your shot and you want to play, especially when you have an incentive-laden contract that hinges on you playing and catching passes and generating receiving yardage. I really wish, though, that he would have found it in himself to just not even appeal it and take the suspension. And hopefully the appeal will be unsuccessful and he will miss a game so other players will know where that line is between what is and what isn't permitted.
Mike, do you buy the line of thinking that the Rams got to jump on everyone with McVay, and by firing Jeff Fisher a few weeks to go in the season, they were able to self-scout and figure out from everyone what the team needed, so they went out there and jumped the gun on other people looking for a head coach, and it's worked out great for that team? And, are the Giants doing the same thing, or is the Giants just the soap opera that became Eli Manning, and that was a bridge too far for ownership, so it's not so much trying to get a jump start for next season. It's the backlash was loud and fast on the Eli Manning move, so everyone had to go.
I like the idea on getting a head start for your coaching search as it relates to gathering information internally, because it would be awkward if you still have a head coach and you're asking players and assistant coaches and others about coaching candidates for next year. With the Giants, I think ultimately what happened, and this is the only way that I can properly explain it to myself or anyone else, Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese, who really did nothing to deserve being fired during the season, I think their sin was they failed to protect their bosses from themselves. And I think that's one of the realities of working for a billionaire. Sometimes you're the one that has got to grab the shoe as it's heading toward a pile of something brown and stinky when the boss is moving his foot in that direction, and you've got to stop them from doing it. You've got to protect them. If necessary, you've got to throw yourself on top of that pile and let them step on your back instead. And I think the greatest transgression here for McAdoo and Reese was to not say to ownership, we have to handle this Eli Manning benching a different way. We have to have a press conference. We have to talk to him before we do it. We have to anticipate how this is going to play out. And I think that the reaction, the frustration, the anger from the owners was the people that we entrusted our football operation with failed to protect us from ourselves and allowed us to do something really stupid and make us look bad. So now we got to get rid of them in an effort to try to make ourselves look good again. And meanwhile, the same two guys who thought McAdoo was the answer will be the two guys who are hiring the next head coach, which really doesn't inspire a whole lot of confidence from my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to, you know, what you're saying is you got to be like a tweeting White House lawyer or
And when McAdoo came out last week and seemed to dispute John Mara's account,
right?
Because Mara, when he finally spoke to the media, he's like, well, McAdoo handled it the way he saw fit. Then McAdoo says 2 days later, we're on the same page about that. I mean, that's just a guy who's trying to get fired. That's the George Costanza, tie the trophies to the bumper of your car and drive around the parking lot. Yeah.
Juju Smith-Schuster took out Burflick. And I mean, look, that sort of thing happens in games, and that was, you know, but to be yelling karma in the back of after a game of like that, that Antonio Brown sort of, I don't know. I mean, maybe that is something the league takes a look at more so than they would have because the guy's yelling it in the locker room.
Well, I'm not sure Antonio Brown should have even been talking to the media after the game. I think he got concussed on the hit by George Iloka,
yeah,
and they failed
zone to
evaluate him and remove him from the game. And if he had a concussion, he shouldn't have been talking to reporters after the game. We played a clip of that on PFT Live today, and he didn't seem right to me. Not as bad as that clip from Chad Johnson years ago where he was clearly messed up after getting blown up back when hits like that were legal. Clearly illegal hit on Brown, clearly illegal hit on Burfict by Juju Smith-Schuster. And this one, you know, was more like the Danny Trevathan hit on Devontae Adams. Now, Burfict didn't end up in the hospital. And even though they immobilized him, he got off of the backboard and he was trying to get back in the game. I hope that the NFL, for the purposes of properly guiding players on what's expected, I hope the NFL will mete out discipline based upon the dangerous activity, not the consequence. Because it seems like it's more likely a guy gets suspended when that illegal hit causes a concussion. I think the whole idea is get rid of the activity that potentially causes the concussion, and that hit was sufficiently vicious that you have to wonder, will the NFL consider yet another suspension? There's been so many suspensions this year for in-game activities. I've lost track of them, but maybe one day after Rob Gronkowski got suspended, we're going to hear that Smith-Schuster's gotten suspended as well.
And Mike, you mentioned you know, the same guys in New York are going to be hiring the next front office and head coach. And that shouldn't inspire a whole lot of faith from the fan base. Well, you know, here comes the handwriting on the wall for John Fox. And it sounded like he even realized the tone that he answered questions with yesterday. He knows he's out the door. Should fans be inspired or have faith that Ryan Pace is going to get it right? And would note that the GM's got 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think you have to wonder whether or not Pace gets a chance to come back. A lot of it depends upon who they desire to target as a head coach. If they break the bank for Jim Harbaugh and bring him back to Chicago, and Harbaugh doesn't want Ryan Pace to be the one setting the table, then you bite the bullet and you treat it as a cost of doing business and you move on from Pace. But I really do think what happens next, and we talk about Ted Phillips all the time. For whatever reason, he escapes widespread scrutiny, but you know, he's the guy who brought in Phil Emery, and that was a disaster, especially after Mark Trestman ended up being the head coach. And now the Pace-Fox marriage has not worked well. We don't know whether or not Mitchell Trubisky is truly going to be a franchise quarterback. But what they target, is it going to be a guy who works for Pace and won't be regarded as a threat to Pace, or will it be somebody who comes in and is given the keys to the car? That's the philosophical decision they're going to have to make based upon which candidates are available, which candidates they decide they want, and who they believe can finally turn the team around.
You know, here's the problem the Bears have, is that there's a quarter of a season left, and they are running out of players pretty quickly, running out of kickers pretty quickly, running out of everything.
That's right. You still got four full games that you got to get through, and it's a good opportunity to evaluate your young players. The problem is, if you're not sure who's going to be there to turn those evaluations into personnel decisions next year, it makes for just for an awkward playing out of the string. And it's a shame because at one point this year it really did feel like it was going to be different. It really did feel like they were going to be competitive. And I don't put it past them to rise up and surprise someone down the stretch, but it's definitely not where the team wants to be. 3-13 last year, possibly 3-13 again this year, and a far cry from where they need to be in order to get the fan base fully engaged.
And I don't know how closely you're watching it, but Ryan Pace, 3 years in, when you look at free agency and the draft, is that enough time to start to evaluate whether he knows what he's looking at?
Well, I mean, the problem with the NFL is when you see guys come in and make a huge impact right away, young coaches, experienced coaches, what Andy Reid in Kansas did in Kansas City from the moment he was hired, you see that there are guys who can figure it out right away. Sean McVay in L.A. with the Rams. There are people who can do it quickly, and I think that five-year plan, three-year plan, broad evaluations, look, can you come in and figure out how to win football games? Either you can or you can't, and that's the one variable that's independent of the salary cap. You can have as many buyouts as you want. You can pay coaches as much as you want, and I think that's the one, that's the most overlooked way to make a bad team good quickly. You make the right hire of a head coach, the right hire of a front office person, and I think after 3 years, it's fair to look at where the Bears are right now and say, you are what your record says you are, as Bill Parcells would say, and 1-3-13 chased by possibly another is not a ringing endorsement of Ryan Pace's overall abilities.
You know, I kind of liked what Todd Bowles did last week because it just talks about to accountability and that the idea that, you know, there's a certain point in every season where you worry that guys are no longer buying in or paying attention or willing to close out the season. And, you know, you have to hold people accountable. You have to have some discipline in order to get through that sort of a push.
Well, absolutely. And if you allow those kinds of traits to exist where guys are showing up late, where guys, you know, it spills over to other players and you reach a critical mass and then your whole team ends up being a mess. So I think it's important for Bowles, who's done enough this year, I think, to continue as coach of the Jets. They're 5-7. There were multiple other games they could have won, should have won. They should be in the playoff chase. They're not out of it yet. And they played valiantly against the Chiefs on Sunday. It was a desperate Chiefs team that pulled out all the stops offensively. But the Jets, to their credit, down 14-0, kept fighting, gutted out the win, scored 38 points. And they have reason for hope. They probably have more reason for hope on the Jets right now than the Giants currently do.
Wow, that's saying something.
All righty, Mike. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate your time as always.
All right, see you guys.
That's great.
Wow. I had to digest that for a second.
You stopped cold. You should have seen yourself. Like, what?
Well, I may be, but doesn't mean that Mike's not correct.
Oh, God. You know, we got to squeeze in this call. This guy, Jerome, has waited a long time. Good morning, Jerome.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Good.
Listen, did you see the Sun Times today?
Yes, sir.
What do you think of it? Because I think that the Bears are the best organization that is out there. They make money doing nothing. And Ted Phillips, what I want you guys to do is come work for me so we can hold seminars so Ted Phillips can teach the rest of the world how to make money and do nothing and get rich.
Well, pretty much every NFL organization makes money before they even turn the key on anything, right?
Yeah, you're talking, Jerome, about Rick Morrissey's story that Chicago's least wanted, so...
Yeah, and most of the candidates that he offers up are attached to the Bears, either on the sideline or the front office or in ownership.
George and Ted and...
Yeah, many of them.
Dal Logan. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
In the back
I like the guys, but, you know, there's still at least one.
Your guy, Pacey.
That is. I mean, that's, you know, a good how-to seminar. First, you get yourself an NFL organization. Everyone makes money, and even if you don't know what you're doing, everyone makes money.
Right. We talked about the Bears bringing in John McDonough. You know, George is a fan. Why not hire John McDonough?
Big Blackhawks fan.
And we have someone saying that it's more likely they'd look around town and they'd hire Gar Forman.
He's right across the street. I go get him.
I want to thank everyone for calling and texting and emailing. Most of all, thank you a ton for listening. We certainly appreciate it.
Have a great day, everybody. We will be back bright and early tomorrow morning, live at 5. Please join us.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.